It's time for Good Health, an opportunity to hear from our local healthcare community about the most current medical topics and how they relate to your healthy lifestyle. Good Health is brought to you by Good Shepherd Healthcare System. Now let's welcome our host, Nick Bayerano.
Welcome to Good Health, sponsored by Good Shepherd Healthcare System. I am your host, Nick Bayerano. Joining us in the studio today is Dr. Todd Jones, general and venous surgeon who recently joined the Good Shepherd Medical Group in Hermiston. If you have any questions, send us an email to kohugoodhealth@gmail.com. Welcome to the show, Dr. Jones.
Good morning.
Dr. Jones, to help get us started, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I grew up in Bellingham, Washington, which is about 80 miles north of Seattle. And then I went to Seattle University for college, and then I studied abroad in Guadalajara, Mexico, actually, for 4 years while studying to become a doctor. And then I finished up my training in New York City at New York Medical College.
I know that your wife also works here with you, Dr. Jennifer Post, who I've had on the show before about a year ago, around the same time. And she specializes in endocrinology, but what I want to know is what drew you both to Hermiston as a place to practice your specialties?
Well, we lived in New York City for about 8 years, a little over 8 years. Both of us are from the West Coast originally. All of our family is on the West Coast, hers in California for the majority, some of it in Seattle, and the vast majority of mine is in the Seattle and California area as well. We lived in big cities for about 17, 18 years, and as much as the big city has to offer, didn't have the kind of lifestyle that we were looking for. And Good Shepherd is a place that has a lot of outdoor activities. So we wanted to come to a place where we felt that our skills and all that training that we had tried to do would impact the community in a beneficial way, and also we'd have a lifestyle that was a little bit more relaxed, and we'd be able to get outdoors and do a little bit more than rather just walking around Central Park.
Yeah. One thing I liked about what you shared with me a little bit yesterday is you said you had lots of friends who were planning on staying in an urban area, and you said you'd rather be out.
Oh, I'd rather be out mowing my lawn, yeah.
Yeah, which is pretty cool. So what made you choose to become a general surgeon?
Well, I actually thought that I wanted to do emergency medicine when I first went into medical school, but I wasn't entirely convinced of the idea. My dad was an ER doc, actually, for 52 years.
Wow.
I had wanted to sort of follow in his footsteps, and I was very lucky to have him as a role model. But he actually had discouraged me away from emergency medicine because, pardon me, that field had changed a lot compared to what it was like when he first got into it. And a lot of things that emergency docs used to do, like trauma and stuff like that, had sort of been moved away from them. And, they were calling a lot more specialists those days. And he didn't think the field was going to be a good fit for me because those kinds of emergency situations were what I was interested in.
Hmm. So I guess you still get to participate in traumas now, obviously, as a general surgeon.
Yes, yeah, I'm a general, and general surgeons by definition are also trauma surgeons. There is a subspecialty for that, which I did not complete, but any general surgeon is competent to perform trauma assessments.
Good to know. So people may see you in the emergency room, obviously, when they come in.
Yes, that's a distinct possibility if somebody comes in with a trauma, that about a one-third of the chance that I'll be the one that's there.
Okay. You also have a specialty in venous surgery. What is it that, and what are some conditions that you treat?
Well, veins are, two of the main types of vessels within the body. Arteries take the blood away from the heart and provide the oxygen and sugar and nutrients that our cells need to metabolize or survive and do their jobs. And the venous system is what brings blood back to the heart. And they, even though they seem to accomplish similar things, they're physiologically they're physically very different structures, and they behave in very different ways. So venous disease, or the study of venous disease, is exactly that, the study of particular venous disorders. The more common things that I treat are swelling and edema of the lower extremities, varicose veins, spider veins, things like that.
Okay. And I know just from doing my own research, that venous disease is actually pretty prevalent here in the U.S. I think, what is it, 50% of Americans have it?
Well, yeah, it's not quite that high, okay. but you know, at least 20% of the population has some major form of venous disease, either varicose veins or swelling or edema or venous insufficiency. And then when you get into talking about even things like spider veins, which are a little bit more cosmetic, more of an annoyance than they are of something that causes pain or daily discomfort, you can get up to those numbers like 50%. But, you know, 20% is still a significant amount of the population.
Yeah, definitely is still a pretty significant amount. So you're listening to Good Health on KOHU, and joining me today is Dr. Todd Jones, who recently joined the Good Shepherd Medical Group. If you have any questions, send us an email at kohugoodhealth@gmail.com. Again, that is kohugoodhealth@gmail.com. So, Dr. Jones, one thing I want to ask you is, since you're a general surgeon, how do patients typically come into your care? Is it a referral? Is it a self-referral? Or is it from the ER, obviously, probably as well?
Kind of all three, actually. Unfortunately, with insurance, sometimes patients are not allowed to self-refer, depending on the condition, to a general surgeon. However, they still can come in and be evaluated by me or one of my partners. When it comes to venous disease, most insurance companies actually do allow self-referrals, so it's a little bit less difficult to get an appointment. But the vast majority of my consults come from either self-referrals, referrals within the local community, and then I get a lot of referrals from the ER as well.
Okay. So when it comes to patient care, how do you determine the best treatment method for your patients?
Well, that's, you know, a lot of times it can be very complex, and, at least 50% of the people that I see, you know, they're not seeing me for, you know, just a general surgical condition. They also have other medical problems. And so those can factor into the decision of the type of therapy that we want to do. Those decisions, though, you know, this is the information age. We're in the 21st century, and the internet is very prevalent. And a lot of people, in fact, the vast majority of patients, have looked things up and their conditions and the possible treatments on the internet before they come in. And so a lot of times my job is really kind of explaining the risks and benefits of all those different options that they read about, helping to debunk some of the myths that they discovered while they were on the internet, because there's a lot of misinformation out there. Mm-hmm. And then, together we come up with a plan that, based on my recommendations and what they would like to do.
Okay. So the internet in some case can actually probably hinder, does it hinder your interaction with patients to some degree, or?
It can, it doesn't always, but you know, there, unfortunately, for as much good information out there, there seems to be many times more bad information a lot of times. And so, you know, and reading blogs and things like that online, you know, I mean, people can say whatever they want on those blogs, and their experiences may be influenced by their personal experience, and what they say may not be accurate for how these things, you know, how a particular procedure usually goes or the outcome is as a whole. And then on top of that, sometimes there's just complete incorrect information on the internet. So it occasionally does, but in general, I find actually it to be a bit refreshing for patients to have some knowledge of already what's going on with them and what the options are when they come into the office.
So now along those same kind of lines, you know, if somebody coming in, I just want to kind of allow our listeners to understand a little bit more of some of the conditions that you actually do treat. What are some of the most common?
Well, it depends on where the patient comes in to see me a lot of times. If I come for the office, the two most common things that I see are probably patients with hernias and then patients with some kind of gallbladder disease. If it's coming from the ER, then I'm, you know, a lot of things I see are, you know, acute hernias or ones that are complicated. Appendectomies or appendicitis is something that I see very frequently in the ER, as well as acute complications of gallbladder disease.
Okay. So, since you are a surgeon, and some of our listeners might be thinking that surgery is the only way that you treat patients, what are some common non-surgical treatment methods that you use?
Well, that is complex question, Nick.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But at the same time, you know, surgery is a science, a medical science, has advanced a lot in the last 20, 30 years. Mm-hmm. And a lot of things that we used to treat surgically, now we treat medically. And surgeons will treat patients medically. So if you have diverticulitis or something like that, which is an inflammation in the colon that's acute, you know, used to be that that was always treated surgically, and now we treat it medically with bowel rest and fluids and painkillers and antibiotics. And then when patients get better, they can go home and they don't necessarily need a surgery. Whereas, you know, 20 years ago, all of those patients would have a major surgery when they came into the hospital for the most part. Also, gallbladder disease can be treated more conservatively depending on the case and the patient. So there's a lot of different therapies for everything, and not everyone needs surgery. And that's part of a surgeon's job, is determining who requires surgery and who does not, and then discussing the options with the patients. And there's benefits and drawbacks to each type of therapy. So and that's part of our job, is to go over all of that with our patients and make sure that they at least understand the, you know, the basics of those procedures or those therapies, and then what the benefits and drawbacks of each of them are.
So if you are meeting with a patient and you are needing to treat them surgically, what are some common treatment methods that you frequently use?
Well, you know, nowadays things are becoming more and more what we call minimally invasive. So if a patient needs a surgery, you know, the first thing to determine is what kind of surgery they need. And then based on what needs to be done, you know, we can discuss the various options. Sometimes things can be treated with, you know, just a little bit of numbing medication and a needle, or you know, a small nick, like if an abscess or something like that, which is a, you know, collection of infected fluid. Other times they need something a little more invasive, but a lot of times what we do now is what we call laparoscopy, which is using cameras and smaller incisions to take a look inside a person's abdomen and see if we can treat it that way, because that enhances recovery time greatly for patients, and they have less pain afterwards and they have less complications if we can accomplish the surgery in that manner. And sometimes we can't always do that, and sometimes we go in and we look with the laparoscope and realize that the condition may be too far advanced, or you know, just untenable to manage in a manner like that. Mm-hmm. And then they have to get a larger incision.
Okay. So as far as what you see happening in the industry is in the future of surgery, what do you expect is going to be coming?
Well, you know, I'm sure most people have heard of robotic surgery, which is, you know, a relatively new form of minimally invasive surgery. It's similar to laparoscopic surgery, where we use cameras and smaller incisions, except that the instruments are actually controlled by a robot, which is controlled by the surgeon. That is probably going to come into be more significant in the near future, probably the next 10 to 15 years. And a lot more surgeons are already doing a lot of robotic surgeries with the robot. And the benefits of the robot are that it offers a 3D view, which we cannot get with a regular laparoscope, so we can see better inside. Mm-hmm. And then we get a little bit more control over our instruments. The instruments are actually mimic the motions of the hands and fingers much, much better than we can with the laparoscopic instruments. But at the same time, the technology is, it's not in its infancy, it's well developed, but the medical evidence for it is not as developed as it is for laparoscopic surgery. And it is something that I'm working with the hospital. The hospital does have a robot, a Da Vinci robot. And I'm going to be working with them to get that robot up and running and online. And right now it's being utilized mostly by the obstetric surgeons, and not as many of the general surgeons are using it over there, but I would like to use it. But it's something, you know, a possible therapy that in the future I would be offering to my patients. But it, again, you know, with every type of therapy, there are benefits and drawbacks, and those things need to be gone over and discussed with the patient so that we can choose the best therapy for them.
So, and you kind of just answered my question there, but I was going to ask, how do you determine which is the best method, obviously, whether it's, you know, creating an incision, whether it's doing laparoscopic or robotic surgery? Does it vary person to person? Is it depend on, what are the factors that go into your thought process there?
Well, yeah, it does, Nick, it does vary person to person, because you know, when you want to decide to take somebody and do a laparoscopic surgery or a minimally invasive surgery versus taking them and doing a larger open surgery can vary most definitely from person to person based on what their medical problems are, based on what their whether they've had surgeries in the past or not, and then also the severity of their condition. So sometimes that choice is unfortunately sort of made for us by the nature of a patient's condition. What's actually happening with them at the time that's surgical and needs surgery, and also any previous medical and surgical history they've had. And then other times we have more options, and we can, you know, it's a discussion. It's much different than it was, years ago when patients showed up to the office and the doctor said, well, you need this, and then the patient said, well, okay. Now it's more of a discourse with the patients, and, we get to go over the risks and the benefits and what how they outweigh or don't outweigh each other for each different procedure and come to a decision together.
You're listening to Good Health on KOHU, and today we've been talking with Dr. Chad Jones, a new general surgeon in Hermiston. Have a question for Dr. Jones? Send us an email to kohugoodhealth@gmail.com. Again, that is kohugoodhealth@gmail.com. So Dr. Jones, outside of the office routine, what are some of the things that you also take care of?
You mean conditions?
Yeah, conditions.
Okay. I do a lot of venous disease. I actually did a fellowship in that in New York at New York University for venous disease. And that's not something that our area has really had offered to them before. I believe there's somebody up in Tri-Cities doing it. In Oregon, specifically Eastern Oregon, I think I'm one of the only surgeons that does those procedures, me and my partners. And that's something that we offer that's outside of not outside the normal scope of practice for a general surgeon, because most surgeons are competent to do that procedure, but it's just not something that they're very familiar with.
So if somebody does recognize they have venous disease, how do they come in contact with your office? Is it something they self-refer for? Or
Yes, they can usually self-refer for it. I would recommend that they, talk to their insurance provider if they have one about whether or not they can self-refer. Although our office does check for those kinds of things prior to the patient coming to see us, because we wouldn't want somebody to get, overcharged for coming to the office if they were not able to self-refer. But most patients either self-refer, and then a lot of times I get referrals from the family practice and internal medicine docs in the area for patients with venous disease.
Okay. So I know our listeners are probably thinking, I've heard Dr. Jones now on the radio. What can I expect if I were to come into his office and see him? What is his care like?
Well, I would actually say that most likely they can expect a similar conversation with what I've had with you, Nick. It's a back and forth, and kind of the first things that, I will do when a patient comes to the office is I'll look through their chart and their medical information and kind of determine, an imaging and studies that have been done already, and kind of determine an idea of what it is that they're there for and what I can do to help them. And then the next thing would be to do an exam, and that's usually, because I'm a surgeon, we like to focus our exams. We're not like the general practitioners where when you come in, they kind of look at you from head to toe. Although I will do a general assessment on everybody, but I usually focus in the area of interest, and we'll talk about the specific symptoms that they're having or not having, pain and things like that, and where it hurts and when and how and why, and maybe what precipitates it and what doesn't. What makes it better. And then, based on all that information, we sit down and we talk about what I think the best options for them are. They ask me questions and I answer them. And if they've heard of other therapies that I didn't bring up on the internet or from friends or family or whatnot, we talk about why, I talk about why or that may or may not be a good option for them. Because with all that information, it's really, I think it can be overwhelming to patients and to get all this information off the internet. So one of the main things I try to do is just sort of dispel the myths and then also, help guide them to a therapy that I think is going to be beneficial for them.
Okay. So going back to the venous disease, if somebody was to come into your office with this condition, what modalities or methods, obviously, do you use to treat venous disease?
Well, in the past, venous disease was treated with pretty aggressive procedures. You know, when you had a vein that wasn't working, in particular, a vein called what we call the great saphenous vein, which is a larger, but not, it's not the main vein in your leg, but it is a larger superficial vein in your leg, and it can cause symptoms of swelling when it starts to work and or malfunction, and the blood flows in the wrong direction.
Wow.
It doesn't flow back towards the heart. It actually will cause pressure and swelling and varicose veins, which are swollen, sometimes painful veins that bulge out from the leg or actually anywhere in the body. And so the way that we used to approach that is that we would do a pretty large surgery and just actually surgically remove that entire vein. And about now 17 years ago, in the United States, a technology was introduced called radiofrequency ablation. And that's just a fancy word for heat ablation. They call it radiofrequency because I think some, you know, for a little bit actually for marketing, because it sounds better than heat ablating. But really what we do is it's a minimally invasive procedure that's done all with needles, with the exception of a tiny, you know, 2 or 3 millimeter incision that's used to introduce that catheter into the vein. And then we heat the vein up, and it actually damages the vein from the inside, and that's the intent. And it gets, and that damaging leads to scar tissue formation, and the vein shuts down. And you know, a lot of patients ask me, well, you know, don't I need that vein? And the easy answer for that is, well, when you have something that's not working properly, it's not doing you any favors. And the body is actually quite unique. The blood will get rerouted to areas that are more efficient and that are actually working properly, get that blood back to the heart where it belongs, rather than having it pool in the legs and cause swelling and pain and other complications.
Wow.
So
is that the only method we currently use?
No, that's not the only method. Okay. At the hospital, we have the radiofrequency ablator, and it's a very proven therapy. It's effective in about 95 to 98% of patients. Although, you know, unfortunately with venous disease, it's sort of a chronic condition. They tend to recur. Not in the veins that we've shut down, although that can happen, but more frequently other veins tend to become malfunctioning or start malfunctioning in patients later on with disease. The other way we can treat it actually is with laser as well, but the principle is the same. Other things that we can do is we can do in what's called injection sclerotherapy, where we use a needle to inject a chemical into the vein that in low concentrations it's not dangerous for the body, but it also sort of damages the interior portion of the vein and causes the vein to shut down. And then the third thing that we do frequently is something called a microphlebectomy. And what that is that's making tiny little 2-3 millimeter incisions, actually can be done in the office, and removing those veins and tying them off and getting them out.
Wow.
We do that typically for the varicose veins.
So are all of these procedures done in the office typically?
Or all of those procedures can be done in the office, yeah.
Wow, that is pretty amazing. So I kind of want to switch gears a little bit here now and just kind of talk about what you and your wife actually enjoy doing in the community when you're not at work.
Well, you know, again, this community and what it has to offer and the more laid-back lifestyle of a rural area is something that we were really looking forward to when we came out here. And some of the things we like to go hiking, actually. We go for walks in the parks, and we go out to, you know, the Hat Rock area and go hiking on the trail there, the Lewis and Clark Trail. We also enjoy being out on the water, out on the Lake Wallula or the Columbia River a lot. And then in general, you know, well, before my training, I used to be pretty outdoorsy, and I liked skiing and snowboarding and all those activities and sledding and snowshoeing. It was difficult to do that in training, but I'm looking forward to this winter season so that I can get back up on the mountain finally.
Yeah. Well, we've got a lot of great places around here to do those things, for sure. So before I go, I wanted to ask you, if someone was in need of a general surgeon, what would you want them to take away from our interview today?
Well, I think that, you know, just the most important thing is to take away that, you know, you're not going to show up to my office or one of my partner's office and have them tell you, okay, this is what you need, and there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It's going to be a decision that's made together, and nothing is going to happen as a patient that you don't want to happen. You can expect that, I'll be compassionate and understanding, and that all of your questions will be answered satisfactorily. And if they're not, or more questions come up later, I'm always available, and you can always come to my office or call the office and we can talk about things. And in general, just, realize that my job is just to try and make people feel better. That's why I went into medicine, why I wanted to be a surgeon, because I felt that that would be a place in within the medical community that I'd be able to make the best impact based on my skill set and what I like to do. And, I'm very passionate about my job, and I'm very passionate about making sure patients get well taken care of. And so, you never have to worry that there's anything other than my concern for your well-being when you come to my office.
Awesome. I'm sure that's very comforting for our listeners to hear, for sure. Dr. Jones, I want to thank you for joining me on Good Health Today. Dr. Jones is a new general surgeon in Hermiston, and he is now welcoming new patients, and his office can be reached at 541-667-3804. Thank you, Dr. Jones.
Thank you, Nick.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help.